first coast gets ready for Hurricane Irma just ahead. We've got an update on the path of the monster storm as our Friday roundtable takes your calls. Good Friday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9. You can also get our podcast on iTunes or through the WJCT app. And just ahead, it's our Friday roundtable. Questions, comments, complaints? You know what to do. Give us a call at 549-2937. Then later, Joshua Johnson of 1A, plus a conversation with North Florida Land Trust. Find out what they're doing to preserve Florida's critical public lands. All of that ahead. But first, it's Friday, and time for our weekly roundtable as we welcome David Cotton with the Financial News and Daily Record. Good to see you.
Good morning.
Also with us, regular contributor to the show, Fred Matthews.
Good morning, Melissa.
So good to have you both here, guys. A little bit of a smaller panel today because, of course, local media, along with just about everybody else in Florida, is really concerned about the top story of the week, the path of Irma. Public officials in Northeast Florida are warning, take this storm seriously. And those calls became more urgent Thursday afternoon when forecasters shifted the path of the powerful storm west, predicting that it could menace nearly all of the Florida Peninsula before it comes up our way, hitting the first coast on Monday as a hurricane, not a Category 5, most likely, by the time it gets to our area, but still incredibly powerful and dangerous winds expected. Mayor Lenny Curry is expected to issue mandatory evacuation orders in just a little while today, both for the beaches and for neighborhoods along the St. John's River, as well as residents living in mobile homes and in low-lying areas. More than a dozen shelters are opening this morning. Evacuations have already begun in St. John's and, I believe, Nassau counties. So as we track the path of Irma, we want you to give us a call as we talk about how the First Coast is preparing. Share your memories of past storms, too. Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, or weigh in on Facebook. Fred Matthews, let's begin with you. You know, here in Jacksonville, for decades now, I think there's been this sort of mindset that, well, you know, Jacksonville, for whatever reason, we just don't get direct hits from hurricanes. We've been protected over the years. We just always seem to have a near miss. I think it seems as though public officials this time are really serious about warning folks, don't fall into that mindset. Take this seriously. This could be a bad one.
You really can't ignore the warnings. Yes, you know, everybody hopes that, you know, we've been able to, it's just been a little offshore. It's been a little more inland than we got it. But look, what we got last year, and it just seems like yesterday, for the beaches, for St. Augustine, it was a clear indication that we cannot play with this when it comes through. We just cannot. And a number of friends and associates that are in relatively safe places in inner city are fleeing their homes as we speak and heading north and as far west as they can get out of this, because we can no longer, especially again with what we've just seen happen in Houston and Port Arthur, we just cannot take a chance with that any longer.
Let us know if you're evacuating due to Hurricane Irma, what your plan is for the storm. 549-2937. David Cotton, we are expecting mandatory evacuations for most of the low-lying areas around town. The website jacksready.com is a great place to check out right now to see where your home is, what zone your home or business is, if you're in a zone that's going to be evacuated.
Yeah, and that's where the city has really decided to point people to. Also, 630 City is going to start taking calls 24 hours a day. So if you have any, you know, issues with, you know, any city services requests, that'll be where they're going to funnel that to. But I think the story of this storm versus Matthew is being proactive. The governor issues his state of emergency pretty early in the scheme of things. And, you know, the mayor basically all but said, you know, we're going to issue this mandatory evacuation yesterday. And again, being proactive seems to be the focus of city government here.
Yeah, absolutely. And that even though the National Weather Service, Fred, says by the time Irma gets to our part of town, it'll probably be down to a Category 2, maybe even a Category 1 hurricane. Still, though, those are incredibly powerful winds. The high winds and the storm surge are always the big concern.
That's always a concern for us, even for just the least storm that comes through. Look after, it's been week after week throughout all of the summer, how many times we've ended up doing story after story of wind damage. The tree has fallen on the house. We had that just happen just last week. A road closed because trees have fallen across it. That's really the bigger scare, aside from what's happening at the beaches community. For those within the city limits and around that, that's really the bigger scare, is having the tree fall on your house and taking that time. I mean, I certainly had to do it last spring. I made it a point to get them out there and cut the limbs off of all the trees, because I've got 100-year-old trees, at least three, in my backyard. And I'm sure a lot of other folks are having that same thing. That's the bigger issue, is that having a tree fall on. The flooding is one thing, but I'll tell you, the trees around here will absolutely tear you up.
I know. Last year during Hurricane Matthew, I was at home watching the storm through my window, and this massive tree fell down in our backyard, went down right behind the house, just narrowly missed our house.
Well, same thing over my dad's house, you know, off near the beaches. I mean, a tree completely uprooted. And, you know, that was one of the questions that, you know, was given to JEA officials yesterday. You know, what are you guys doing to be proactive about this? And, you know, the answer is, well, since Matthew, we've been, you know, trying to maintain the canopy and try to, you know, address these issues before it becomes a problem again. Something tells me, though, that, again, like Fred said, this is going to be probably the bigger issue. Down trees, hitting power lines, and folks that I know have been trying all week to get their yards cleaned up so it's not a problem.
Now, if you're just tuning in, we're beginning our roundtable with all the information you need to prepare for Hurricane Irma. It's expected to make its way up the Florida Peninsula, hitting the first coast Sunday into Monday. What are your plans? Are you planning to ride the storm out? Are you planning to evacuate? What are your biggest concerns? Give us a call, 549-2937. Now, let's talk about a few other things where people need to be apprised. Sheriff Mike Williams, Duval County Sheriff, is urging motorists coming from the south, if you're planning on leaving the area, to use Interstate 295 to get around Jacksonville rather than going straight up I-95. I-95 and I-10 in particular, that big interchange expected to be really clogged. We're getting widespread reports of gas pumps running dry. People are flocking to gas stations and grocery stores trying to stock up, getting their bottled water, their gas, and of course, out at the beaches, folks are boarding up. There are people out there who, you know, you go back to Matthew, you go back to other storms like Floyd, even Tropical Storm Faye comes to mind, where people lost their property or saw a lot of damage. And so give us a call in particular if you're out at the beach. Let us know what's going through your mind right now, 549-2937. And Fred, I think you have to go all the way back to 1964. Hurricane Dora was the last storm to really come at Jacksonville head on and make a direct landfall in our beach communities. Irma, you know, we'll have to see if it wobbles west or wobbles east, but it could slice right through this community, whereas Matthew last year kind of skirted us offshore a little bit.
Well, it did, and I think that Dora was such a historic thing for us, and of course the TV stations always carry it. Channel 4 in particular makes a point of covering that, because they were the lead TV station at that time with the pictures along with the Times Union. So certainly it was a big event. But with what we got from Matthew last year, and with a new set of pictures live and in living color, and for this generation, what the beaches went through and the kind of evacuation that they had to go through, it is big. It's probably the biggest present day storm we can relate to now here in Jacksonville, because that really drove it home for this generation. everybody now has a sense of how bad it can be for this generation, and that's often the thing. Now you know what your zone is. When the mayor says you should evacuate in zone A and B, there's no guessing anymore, okay? You can pull out the map, you can zone it, and you can zoom right in, right down to your block level, because those zones do tend to, and you can see exactly where you are. Whereas, of course, 50 years ago, you didn't have that option. You were totally dependent upon, yes, radio. And for those who had color television.
And speaking of radio, let me just make this quick plug that WJCT 89.9 FM is part of the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network. It is a unique network around the state. It covers virtually all parts of the state. And when every other power source goes down, you can still count on public radio for around-the-clock information on this storm, all through the storm. We will be here all weekend and into next week, around-the-clock covering this storm. David Cotton, you know, also, as we talk about Irma, this is the record-breaking storm that sustained 185-mile-an-hour winds across the Atlantic Ocean for an unprecedented amount of time, due in part to much warmer ocean waters. And something else that we're getting used to here in Florida, as is the rest of the eastern seaboard, warmer oceans, attributed in part to climate change, are driving more powerful storms. So we can expect more of these.
I mean, that seems to be the case. I mean, there are three hurricanes right now that are active in the Atlantic and the Gulf of Mexico. And I think for those who deny climate change, I think this is going to be a season where, you know, maybe you want to rethink that view. I think it was 2010 the last time we had three of these storms like this, and it was actually, the same sort of names as well that came through. But this is a powerful storm. It's scary when you have the people at the hurricane centers, the National Hurricane Center, saying they've never seen anything like this. I'm going to take their word for it.
Right. And it's not to say that climate change is causing the storm. It's that the consensus of the scientific community is that we can expect more and bigger powerful storms attributed in part to the warmer oceans.
Yeah, they've done a couple of studies this past week and trying to nail down and try to make that link between global warming and this. They just have not been able to make that link because these storms have been going on for centuries. So you can't really make that link. It is part of the global phenomena that happens every time this year in our part of the world. One quick thing. I know we haven't gotten here yet, but we've had a number of stories, and I'm sure we'll get some calls in about this, of the scams that are going on and the price gouging that are going on. And the biggest one that disturbed me as we began to look around is the airline ticket business. Now, I've undergone several searches leading up to this, and so far from the major airlines, I'm not seeing, just checking a ticket from Miami to New York, Miami to Dallas, Miami to Jacksonville, haven't been able to find, haven't been able to locate any price gouging that I can see. The prices are a little high, but that's about standard for one person. But we've heard the stories about $1,000 and $3,500 a ticket coming out of Miami.
That's just ridiculous.
Which I think we saw earlier in the week, and I think, you know, Pam Bondi's office maybe, you know, tried to hunker that down, because that was about their, you know, their algorithm, how people buy tickets, and, you know, it's all supply and demand and a whole lot of other things there. But, one of the major airliners, I believe it was JetBlue, that came out and said, you know, $99 flights, it's what we're capping them at to get out of Miami. And that's what I think needs to happen.
Yeah, I would think that would be the case, because that would be right along with the drug problem we had last year with that company that, of course, jacked up the prices on that drug.
That is just ridiculous, and but so it just far makes you shake your head.
Yeah. So far, the prices are holding. Okay. I'm seeing about one or two seats on American Airlines or Delta, for those who are down there, that were available at least 2 hours ago.
Okay, let's go to some calls now. How are you planning to get through the storm? 549-2937. David in St. John's County. Hey, David.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Go ahead. What are your plans for the weekend?
And well, we actually finally were able to get water. We woke up, we for the last 2 days, we were trying to get as much water as we could, but we were unable to go between massive amounts of stores to get it.
Uh-huh.
And one of our biggest concerns was is our daughter, who has cystic fibrosis, and with her medications and everything, water's very essential. So that was very worrisome for us.
Sure.
And when we woke up this 4 o'clock this morning, I had seen on the news about the $27 for a 12-pack of water, and I'm like, well, wait, what? And I had to wake up a little bit to see that. But seeing it, I was just like, that's ridiculous. But the actual reason that I actually wanted to call in, which I thought was kind of an interesting concept, was I'm not from Florida originally.
Uh-huh.
You know, we moved here almost 5 years ago, and a friend of mine, he moved from Michigan, and we were sitting down talking about how that we're going to wait to see what our Floridian friends who have lived here for a long time say about what's the, you know, most important thing we should do, if leave or not. And, you know, this is the one thing that they said, that this is the first time they've actually ever really freaked out about something this big.
Uh-huh.
So that kind of took us by storm rather quickly. And it's kind of hectic out here. I mean, people are, it is like, I heard earlier someone say that it's definitely like it's the calm of the storm right now. And people are acting like it's not, and then there are some that are, and we're definitely those that want to make sure we're prepared.
Sure. Yeah, smart to do so. And good luck getting some more water, David. One tip I've always heard, and I need to go buy some bleach today to do this, fill your bathtub now with bleach. Just pour in a tiny little bit of water, and you've got some extra water. Michelle Corum is telling me something different. What do you want to tell me, Michelle? Yeah. Oh, yeah, I misspoke. Fill it with water and a tiny bit of bleach. Sorry about that. It's been a long week. a long weekend to come. 549-2937. Gabe on the south side. Hi, Gabe. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Michelle.
Melissa, yeah. But I work with Michelle.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. No problem. Go ahead.
Sorry, I'm actually evacuating. I'm right here on I-10 traveling west, and traffic is actually backed up, so I want to encourage people to get out if you are planning on getting out, to actually get out early, because I'm actually right here by Live Oak area.
How slow is it moving? How slow are you going?
25 miles an hour. I was actually able to get out on 295 without any problems, and then it looks like the farther west I get, traffic is getting slower and slower.
Wow. Sorry to hear that, Gabe. Good luck on your path. You know, after Hurricane Floyd, the state designated that I-10 could become a one-way highway, but obviously we're not at that point yet.
No, and that question came up yesterday at the governor's briefing here in Jacksonville, and he said, you know, there's no plans right now, but it's not out of the realm of possibility, which, you know, I think maybe that's something that comes maybe Saturday or Sunday if it does come, because right now traffic is already backed up.
What are your plans, Fred? You live here in Duval. Are you planning to stick it out or get out of town? What about you, David?
Yeah, we're going to stick it out from our standpoint. As I said, the bigger issue for us is the trees, and we did as much cutting back as we can. Looks like all of the folks in my little cul-de-sac there are all going to stick it out, I think, except for maybe one family. And they're an elderly couple, older than I am. And I think they're going to they may be leaving to go with friends, but I think they're going to have some folks at their house. So it looks like, for the most part, in my neighborhood, most folks are going to stick it out.
Yeah, I mean, where I live is in an evacuation zone, so I'm going to go stay with some family. But, you know, as journalists, we can't really just leave. You know, we sort of have to be
the ones
on the ground.
That's right. And our news team, including myself and all of my colleagues, we will be on the air beginning Sunday morning continuously and then into Monday. So do keep it tuned to 89.9 for the latest on the storm. Let's go to Jennifer on the south side. Hi, Jennifer. Good morning.
Hi, Melissa. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I appreciate everything that you're doing to try to help Jacksonville get prepared.
Yeah,
I have some questions that I haven't heard anybody address. I am in a white zone. I'm not in a lettered zone. And I'm wondering if someone could explain to me what that means. I'm still trying to decide whether I should stay or wait the storm out. And I think that would help me make a decision. And secondly, I know it's still early, but I haven't heard a lot of people talk about whether we're expected to get a category one or a category two or somewhere in between or worse. So if someone could explain kind of how we're expecting to get affected according to the current forecast, that would be very helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. The part about the intensity of the storm, we'll have to just wait and see. They're anticipating between a category one and two, Jennifer, by the time it reaches the first coast. Now, her question about her zone, we're expecting Mayor Curry any minute to announce mandatory evacuations for, I think, zones. It'll probably be zones A and B, David and Fred.
Yeah.
And Jennifer, go to jacksready.com. Go to that website now and check to see what zone you're in. If you're not in zone A or B, chances are you will not be encouraged to evacuate.
Yeah, and what she's referring to is basically if you look at the evacuation map right in the center of Jacksonville, it's just a big white space there where the rest of the coastal areas and some of the more inland areas are evacuation zones. So not everywhere in Jacksonville you're going to have the higher risk of flooding. I'm not saying that you won't get flooding, but surely the coastal zones and anywhere near, you know, the St. John's River or the intercoastal or even up north, north of the St. John's River, those areas tend to flood first, fast, and, tend to have a lot of water.
And I misspoke again. It's jacksready.org.
.org.
Not jacksready.com. So, Jennifer, if you're still listening, jacksready.org. This is obviously such a matter of great concern for our area and for our state. But we do want to make note of a couple of other news and notes items from the week here with our Friday roundtable. On any other week but the week that Hurricane Irma comes bearing down on us, this would have been our lead story. Two Confederate monuments in Jacksonville were defaced with graffiti spray paint this week. The monument to the Confederate soldier in Heming Park and a monument to the Daughters of the Confederacy in Confederate Park in Springfield. This, Fred, as City Council President Anna Broche has called for these monuments to be inventoried and possibly removed or recontextualized. And so now Jacksonville has seen this defacement. This is something that other southern cities have also been through with people coming and vandalizing these monuments as they become increasingly controversial. They've been controversial for a long time, of course, mm-hmm. but the issue has really heightened in recent weeks after the deadly violence as neo-Nazis and white supremacists held their hateful rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, because they were upset about the removal of a Robert E. Lee statue there.
Well, this story was buried as deeply as the Mayweather fight was last week. In light of what was taking place in Texas, you could not find a word about that fight. You had to dig to find out what the results were if you didn't watch it.
That's right.
The same way with these monuments. I think with the exception of the print media, most of the electronic media didn't bother to put an inch of this story on with a couple of shots and slides. And you had to catch it very fast. But again, this is part of what the right-wing group that has been trying to protect these monuments now for the last year has been concerned about, is that the defacing would begin. But ironically, there was no defacing until the issue came up. And whoever the persons were that went and did this, of course, have now put it on front page. Now, nothing's going to happen, of course, now for at least two weeks. No legislative action. Very little discussion is going to take place with these. But when they do get back in play, this is going to be one of the things they're going to point to as to why we need to do something and why protection needs to be in place for these monuments.
Well, and that plaza in Heming Park has been actually fenced off for a while, not because of this issue, but because they've been doing some work there. And then as soon as that's gone, sure enough, you know, you get someone spray painting that. But, you know, to the point about the legislation, you know, there was a lot of legislation that dropped this week, and that was completely absent.
Yeah.
Anna Broche, City Council President, seems to be backtracking on this a bit. When asked about it by other reporters during this whole Irma deal this week, she's basically said, well, you know, we're worried about Irma.
Yeah.
We're worried about that, and it seems to be a bit of an escape for her. But I think when we have a city council meeting next week, you are still going to see a lot of people in the public comment section referencing that.
Well, the key is going to be, again, with any legislation, who's introducing it? and what committee is it going to first?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously it's got to go through finance. Obviously it's got to go through, I used to call it ways and means, but the rules committee. So it's got to go through the key committees there first for it to be dealt with. And that's the key here, where it's going to go. So who's introducing the legislation? Who's sponsoring it? Who, and once you do, who's signing on to it? We don't have that yet. All we have is talk.
And in conjunction with all of this hue and cry over the monuments, how about this other flap this week? The city and Downtown Vision made a decision to move the monthly downtown art walk in Hemming Park inside.
Yeah.
Because there have been protests in the park over this issue. The local arts and culture activists in this community are up in arms, saying that they are being penalized because there has been some unrest and some protest in Hemming Park. Activists like Hope McMath coming out and criticizing the decision and saying that art and politics are intertwined, that the making of art is a political act, that they're being muffled by taking Art Walk inside. So there's even more fallout coming from this.
Yeah, and I spoke with Jake Gordon, who's the CEO of Downtown Vision, earlier this week for another story, and that obviously sort of came up. And he said, you know, this is more or less for the benefit of the artist. It seemed like last month it was taking away from the event, and that, you know, these activists or whatever you'd like to say are taking away from the artist, and people aren't buying art. They're just going to Hemming Plaza or going downtown to be a part of this protest. And so that's how they tried to spin it. But I have heard from artists who...
It's not going over with the artists.
We're not going well, because it seems like now we're running away from it instead of being strong and saying that this is not going to derail us. A lot of the downtown businesses rely on Art Walk. This is a huge boost for them every month. They can stay open a little bit later. And if it seems like they're trying to downplay this event a little bit, that's not a good sign.
Well, there's always a concern of safety, given the fact of what...
And I'm sure that's what the city is thinking. Yeah.
It's an issue of safety and crowd control. And that's what's going to be on the city father's mind throughout this next quarter of the year.
And Art Walk will be back outside next month for Oktoberfest.
Right. So this could be something that blows over.
Oh, gosh.
We'll have to see, though. Let's go to Aaron in St. Augustine now. Hi, Aaron. Thanks for holding. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a comment and perhaps a question that the panel may offer. So we're here in St. Augustine, and during Hurricane Matthew, the city of St. Augustine, we have a very large parking garage here, and the city had opened it up to all residents to park their vehicles in the event that the storm surge came. And this time around, we went to go drop off my girlfriend's car. We always pack it up, just like we did with Matthew, with important items that we don't want to lose in the house should it go, as we are in a flood zone and need to evacuate by 6 a.m. tomorrow. And so, but as we're driving in, it says that the second and third floors, which are the only covered areas, are reserved for first response vehicles only. In addition to that, there is now in St. Augustine a gigantic parking facility that Flagler College has finished. And Flagler College is busing out, / all the students are leaving today. And as I understand it, Flagler is also closing. And I've been on the phone, I'm a recent alum, as is my girlfriend, trying to see if they would open up their parking garage, because it seems to me that, you know, this storm is bigger than Matthew. It is, and we have more options to park here in St. Augustine now to save some of our assets, but yet we have, less parking options, it seems now, than we did during the hurricane. So I'll take my response off the line.
I'm so sorry to hear that, Aaron. Thanks for that information. That's too bad. And we'll have here in our newsroom, we'll have to look into what's going on with that more deeply.
Yeah, I know a lot of times, people have to actually be there to man these parking garages. So that might be a case there, too.
Now, on our Facebook page, Paula writes, "We're staying put. Look, you can't get out of this place without going over a bridge. If the wind is above 20 miles an hour, it'll shake our cars. We are sticking at home with our pets." Here's another question on our Facebook page. Are there sandbag stations set up in Jacksonville or outlying areas?
So that's been a big deal with the city of Jacksonville, because the city of Jacksonville is not providing sandbags.
But St. John's is, correct?
And some of the beaches cities
and
are.
The beaches.
Yes.
Yes, that's what you can do. Those are the ones that are doing it there. Up through yesterday, you could still find sandbags if you want to, of course, purchase them at Lowe's and that sort of thing. But you're not going to, the city of Jacksonville is just not moving.
And St. John's County, it's my understanding, will have free sandbags at 6 locations. Now, for all I know, they're going to run out, or they've already run out. Clay County, I believe, is also providing some sandbags. So go to your county government websites for the locations.
And probably a good rule of thumb, too, is to make sure you have your ID, because a lot of these locations are going to require you to be a resident of St. John's County or of Atlantic Beach, that sort of thing. The mayor said basically it's a resources issue. Sort of passed the buck to city council yesterday when he was addressing city council, saying, if you guys want to fund this for the next storm, I'm willing to talk about it. But, 800,000 plus residents, we just don't have the resources.
Right. Sorry to give you that news, but that is the latest here from our newsroom. As we track the path of Irma, we will be here all through the weekend and into Monday. Keep it tuned to 89.9 for live coverage. Also, download the Florida Storms app and go to the website, jacksready.org. Know your evacuation zone. Such great insights from both of you gentlemen. David Cotton of the Daily Record, our regular contributor, Fred Matthews. Guys, be safe this weekend, and thanks for being with us.
You too, Melissa.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Take care.
We'll be right back.
We barely started to catch our breath from Hurricane Harvey. Now Irma is headed our way. Satellites have never observed a more powerful Atlantic hurricane, big enough to cover Ohio. Parts of Puerto Rico could be without power for months, and Florida is bracing for a direct hit. Anticipating Irma, next time on 1A. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Hi, this is Chris Thiele inviting you to join us this weekend for a Prairie Home Companion from the Fitzgerald Theater. Our guests include the Avett brothers, Jessica Hoop, and the comedy of Jen Kirkman. Also on hand, the Royal Academy of Radio Actors, Tim Russell, Serena Brooke, and sound effects man Fred Newman, plus my Song of the Week, our salute to musicians' birthdays, and more, all right here.
Saturday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Jazz Night in America, we're going instrument shopping at Home Depot.
Like renovated the bathrooms and the kitchens,
and that's where I come, renovate my music.
The world is an instrument, according to Brazilian percussionist Ciro Baptista. That's on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Thursdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. 1A host Joshua Johnson is coming up on his first anniversary with the program, succeeding public radio icon Diane Rehm. I spoke with him about the show. Joshua Johnson of 1A, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure, Melissa. Thanks for the invitation.
Good to talk to you. Lots happening on this show as you succeeded Diane Rehm earlier this year. Let's begin with the name of the show, 1A, and a nod to kind of top of the fold of the newspaper more traditionally, and also the First Amendment. How important is that moniker to the mission of the show?
Well, it's a representation of the mission of the show. I mean, the First Amendment is, in a lot of ways, kind of the basic rules of the road for how we're supposed to deal with one another from day to day in a democracy. Free speech, free expression, a free press, freedom of religion, assembly, protest. These things are kind of the bedrock of how we just kind of navigate democracy and connect with one another day to day. And 1A is trying to help people navigate that as well. You know, there are a lot of very tough conversations we have to have in this country, and we're trying to make this program be a safe space to be heard in those conversations and a safe space to have those uncomfortable, sometimes seemingly unsafe conversations. And then the reference to the newspaper really just has to do with the sorts of stories that we gravitate toward. You know, there's always those stories on the front page above the fold, which are the ones that everyone's kind of talking about, but they may not all be talking about them as deeply or as insightfully as they could. And then the ones that are below the fold, which may not be the big breaking story of the day, but they're interesting in ways that we should know about because they reflect something about ourselves back to us, and they're worth talking about. So those are the kinds of stories that we focus on, and that's the kind of conversation we're trying to have.
Of course, succeeding an icon like Diane is a big job. It sounds, listening to the show, that you've kept some traditions, like the Friday News Roundup, but you've changed some things about the show, too. What would you say are the biggest changes?
Well, we don't take live calls every day. We still do take calls, but they're not just kind of the basic furniture of the show all the time. We're trying to be thoughtful about why we're taking calls on a particular day. If there is a particular topic that merits the calls, if there's a certain kind of reaction we'd like from listeners kind of in the moment that we think would be helpful, we've made that switch more to voicemails than phone calls than live calls because, among other things, it allows people to compose their thoughts before they decide to speak on the air. It lets you re-record and listen back to what you have to say. And then once we have it, we can really curate the best comments. Or if there are a lot of comments that are along the same lines, we can pick one that's representative and then we can have more different kinds of questions get answered in the hour. But we really have a lot of leeway to just blow up hours of the show and do them in ways that are best for the actual topic, that best serve the content, as opposed to just saying, we've got this hole to fill every day of the week, and what are we going to fill these rigid puzzle pieces with?
Right. Now, for some of our listeners here in Florida, you came up through the public radio system and spent some time in Florida. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'm from West Palm Beach, Florida, so I got my start at what was basically my hometown station, WLRN, in Miami, and I worked at WLRN as a reporter and then an anchor reporter for 6 years, from 2004 to 2010, before I left and got hired at KQED in San Francisco, and then left there and came here to Washington.
And how are you liking Washington?
Washington's great, actually. I know what you see on the news seems like it's a little bit crazy, but the city does not live and die on politics. It's a very political city, of course, but there's a lot more to D.C. than Capitol Hill. There's a lot more to D.C. than the White House, the Supreme Court, the federal government. It's very diverse. It's very interesting. All kinds of people from all over the world. Tons to do, obviously. And it's a nice place to live. The show is a mountain of work, but D.C. makes it easy to kind of get out, go do other stuff, and just kind of be around regular non-journalist people.
Sure. And it's a two-hour live show. It is a big lift every day. What do you spend most of your time on?
In terms of the show or in terms of preparing for the big lift?
In terms of preparing.
It varies. I read a lot. I read a lot of books. You know, when we book an author to talk about their book, I make a point of reading the book. We have producers who take the first pass at the script and the questions, and they also compile prep materials, links, and documents. And so I spend a fair amount of my time, you know, reading through that. But it varies. I mean, every show takes a little bit of a different degree of work to put together. There's always something to read, and there's always something to prep ahead for, but it's worth it. I think it makes the show easier to do if I do my homework. If I don't do my homework, I start to twitch, and I get really, really nervous. You know, I always remember that expression from, I think it's the Army or the Marines, the more you sweat in peace, the less you bleed in war. And I think doing the sweat work, doing the prep work at the beginning makes for a better show for me and hopefully for people who listen.
And you've been on the program now for better part of a year. What are your long-term goals for this gig?
Yeah, well, we're coming up on our first one-year anniversary, our first birthday, which is very exciting. I think my primary goal for the show, we have a couple of goals. I mean, we want to help stations like WJCT and others continue to reach their existing audiences and also to serve people who think public radio is not for them. You know, it's those people who think, I don't speak in 14-letter words and I didn't finish that master's degree, so I guess I'm not smart enough to listen to NPR. That's just not who we are, and that's not who we should be. And hopefully 1A can be one of those programs that will have an energy and a style and a focus that's unique but also seamless with what other people are doing both on local stations and NPR. So they'll listen to 1A, they'll hear First Coast Connect, they'll hear Here and Now and All Things Considered. You know, the next morning maybe they hear Morning Edition, and they get into this continuum of this wonderful thing that we do 7 days a week. So hopefully we're bringing in new people. And then I would really just like to see us be a bigger part of the national conversation. I mean, I consider our real competition to be the Rush Limbaughs of the world. And no disrespect to people who like Rush Limbaugh. If that's what you like to hear, that's fine. But I think there is a lot that he cannot do to improve the dialogue in this country. But we can. NPR is built for that. WJCT has always been built for that. And if we can reach those people who think that we're not for them, that we don't want them, that we don't respect them, that we don't care about them, then we can be a larger part of the national conversation. We can be more incisive when things go sideways. We can be the first place that people turn to and say, I got to hear what this is going to be like on 1A. You know, when something happens in Northeast Florida, WJCT should be the very first place people go to. That not just part of the diet. You should be the first stop, because people should know, if I want to hear this discussed smartly and well, this is my source. And I want us to be the source for the nation, to deal with the big stuff, to deal with the topics that need to be dealt with right.
Well, good to talk to you, Joshua Johnson, the host of 1A. Thanks for being with us. And we'll be right back.
America is preparing for Hurricane Irma as the cleanup begins in the Caribbean.
I would say that about 95% of the properties would have suffered some level of damage. It is absolutely heart-wrenching.
Some islands are barely habitable. Also, the latest with North Korea, and we break down Myanmar's growing crisis with the Rohingya. The Friday News Roundup next time on 1A. Weekdays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm Christopher Kimball from Milk Street Radio. This week, Milk Street travels to Okinawa, Japan to get a taste of Blue Seal ice cream. Laura Shapiro talks about her new book, What She Ate, which profiles six famous women from Helen Gurley Brown to Eva Braun. We offer a recipe for kofta, that's Turkish meatballs, and Kenji Lopez-Alt gets to the bottom of marinades. Coming up this week on Milk Street Radio from PRX.
Sunday mornings at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
Folk, blues, jazz, R&B, country, western, Americana. It's all acoustic and it's all in one place. And that one place is String Theory. And you can hear String Theory Friday nights at 11 p.m. only on 89.9 WJCT. String Theory, the very best of modern acoustic music. This and every Friday night at 11 p.m. on WJCT.
Welcome back. Finally this hour, it's a new way to preserve critical lands in Florida in desperate need of protection. The strategy comes from North Florida Land Trust. Leader Jim McCarthy is here to explain. Hi, Jim.
Hey, how are you, Melissa? Good to see you.
Good to see you. And we're worried about Hurricane Irma, of course, but there is other news to talk about, including North Florida's preservation lands. That's something North Florida Land Trust really focuses on, preserving lands around the state. And you have been working so hard on this, in particular because in the last state budget, there was no funding given to critical programs like Florida Forever and others, right?
That's correct. And that's caused us to really cut back some of our efforts or not be successful and bring some of our projects to completion. And that's been a real problem for us. To tie in a little bit with the hurricane, we've learned a lot of lessons from Houston already and what they have done. For example, that caller that called in a few minutes ago who's living in a floodplain. That's a problem. I mean, and the more we cover up our floodplains, the more water, more flooding we get, particularly downriver.
That's why Houston suffered so badly.
Correct.
They developed over all that land.
They did. And not only did they cover it up downtown, but they also moved it further out into their bayou, which is very similar to our St. Johns River. So there are a lot of analogies we should be looking at and trying to preserve and protect, particularly our recharge areas, like Keystone Heights, for example, the folks with the lakes, those lakes are dropping because the aquifer is dropping. If we could somehow put more funding into preserving that area so that it's not developed, we could obviously minimize the amount of flooding that's taking place or could take place. We're going to find out, I think, in the next couple of days exactly what that could have done. It was an interesting article in the New York Times this week that also showed on their website, actually, and it shows Houston's development over the past 20 years, mm-hmm. and the development, particularly in floodplains, and how it has impacted their downtown later, and so it's a serious concern for us. And without state funding, we're not going to get there.
And that is a big problem. No state funding for land preservation, as we've seen in the past. So what's the new strategy for North Florida Land Trust?
Well, we're moving forward and supporting. We put together a good coalition of conservation groups, environmental organizations, and we're supporting the Florida Legacy Act. It basically takes 40% of the funds that are in that land acquisition trust fund that was created under the Amendment 1 program that was passed by 75% of the voters in Florida. And we're proposing that you take 50% of that and apply it to the Florida Forever priority list that was developed by the ARC, and then 25% of it to the Department of Agriculture for rural and family lands programs, and then another 25% to the Department of Environmental Protection for Florida Communities Trust. That's the program that our counties and cities use to build and buy their parks. Parks provide other services other than just recreation, and part of this is obviously to reduce the impacts of flooding. Part of it is economic development. There's a lot of ecotourism, particularly in the Timucuan Preserve, for example. We're about to acquire a piece of property on near Pumpkin Hill. With private money, we've fortunately been able to have a couple of fairly large donors help us. But when you look at an island like Black Hammock, for example, which has high environmental value, everybody recognizes that, wants to acquire that property. It's important for the Timucuan in particular. We want to buy that, but it's just a process where you can't get that kind of private funds. Mm-hmm. So we have to turn to the state for some of that money. And we're willing to match and certainly able to do that. So.
And the long-term goal is protecting the Florida aquifer, protecting clean water. Isn't that, in the end, what your end game is?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. We're very concerned about not only our water quantity, but our water quality. This is going to become a big issue. I noticed my first trip to Arizona was in 1985, and I was surprised when I learned that they were having water wars, literally. The folks in Colorado were diverting water from the Colorado River into California. And the state of Arizona was suing Colorado and California, very similar to what's going on with the Apalachicola River, where the state of Georgia is diverting water into Alabama. So here we are 20, 30 years later, and we're experiencing the same thing that's been happening out west for some time. So we need to learn lessons well.
Yes. And for more information on this, people need to visit your website.
Yes. And we make this a little bit of a challenge, but it's NorthFloridaLandTrust.org.
NorthFloridaLandTrust.org. Critical work as Jim McCarthy focuses on land acquisition here in Florida. We'll keep following this issue. Hope you ride out the storm successfully. And Jim, thanks for coming in today and sharing this update with us.
Thank you very much.
That's our show today. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme, composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Send your feedback to us. We always appreciate it. Emails go to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And always check out our podcast on iTunes or the WJCT app. Up next on 1A, the weekly news roundup. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. This show rebroadcast tonight at 8 p.m. We'll be here on Sunday tracking the storm live on the air and back Monday at 9 a.m. with Hurricane Irma coverage. Keep it tuned to 89.9 as we track the storm and bring you vital information all throughout the weekend and into next week as part of the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network, your source for updated storm information at all times. Stay safe, everybody. We'll be talking to you soon.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.